540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In a case linked to the 2020 shooting death of Breonna Taylor during a police raid, a mistrial has been declared. Jurors were deadlocked on former officer Brett Hankison's verdict. He's facing federal civil rights charges for blindly firing his gun. Taylor family attorney Lanita Baker.
Of course, the family is disappointed. This is not the outcome they wanted. But we are here for the long game, and so just as the prosecutors intend to retry Brett Hankison, we intend to be here when that retrial takes place.
No word yet from federal prosecutors on a retrial. The Israeli military says its search of Al-Shifa is ongoing, with tunnels found underneath the building and the body of an Israeli hostage discovered near the hospital in Gaza. CBS's Deborah Patta in East Jerusalem.
Al-Shifa can no longer receive new patients, and so they flee in their thousands, streaming southwards, setting up temporary shelter, only to be told today by Israeli soldiers that they must evacuate again. But if they stay, they risk becoming part of the soaring death toll, which the Hamas-run health ministry puts at around 11,500.
President Biden says the U.S.-China economic relationship is crucial to the world economy.
Speaking to CEOs at the Asia-Pacific Economic Conference in San Francisco, the president said a stable relationship with China is good for everyone, and not just for business, but for national security.
We have real differences with Beijing when it comes to maintaining fair and level economic playing field and protecting your intellectual property. We're going to continue to address them with smart policies and strong diplomacy.
The president also said in his meeting with China's President Xi, he stressed that the U.S. seeks to de-risk, not decouple, with China. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
A blistering report from the House Ethics Committee on New York Congressman George Santos is reviving efforts to remove him from Congress. Santos refuses to step down, but now says he won't run for re-election next year. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
They didn't just say he acted unethically. They say he stole money. They didn't just say he had misconduct in office. They say he committed fraud. They said what they found paralleled the criminal case against him.
RSV infections rise sharply in parts of the U.S., including Georgia, Texas, and Virginia. The federal government is responding with the release of 77,000 more doses of a new RSV shot for newborns. Tiffany Kimbrough is a pediatrician at Children's Hospital of Richmond at VCU.
Most places did not get enough doses to kind of meet the demand for what we would hope to be able to provide.
This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Roll into this Friday night and strike a chord of fun, food, and music at Foxview Lanes in Waukesha. A Friday night live music party kicks off at...
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Low unemployment is holding steady in Wisconsin, 3.2% in October compared to 3.1% in September. Research shows even more people would be working in Wisconsin if it weren't for childcare challenges.
The difficulty in finding childcare translated into about 60,000 workers. Potential workers that weren't in the workforce because of that.
Dennis Winters is the chief economist for the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Scientists at the University of Wisconsin in Madison find the donated brains of men who were veterans in World War II, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War were 26% times more likely to show signs of Alzheimer's disease than men who did not serve in the military. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
John Money is back for the Pack. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers ready to host the Chargers and one of the best passers in the league, quarterback Justin Herbert, Sunday at noon. The good news is that they should have defensive back Jair Alexander back in the lineup. He was back at practice after suffering a shoulder injury against the Steelers. The bad news is that safety Rudy Ford suffered a biceps injury against Pittsburgh. He missed practice again. The Brewers today introducing 64-year-old Pat Murphy as the new manager. Murphy's always been the glue guy in the Crew's clubhouse. Oh, that changed? I asked GM Matt Arnold.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he has been the glue guy for a lot of years. I think you have a good read on that, and I think it's going to be be on us to all take, our coaches, our front office, everybody to take a bigger role. You know, I think that Murph is going to be up for this challenge. He's been a leader for a lot of years, and so I think we're going to do just fine. It's just on everybody else to step forward and continue to help Murph as much as we possibly can.
Brewers general manager Matt Arnold with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Krebscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered showers tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows level off around 38, west winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, highs around 45, lows around 28 tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I came across this article today, made me angry, made me sad, frustrated, a lot of things. Can't say out loud. It was about United Health. As you know, United Health is the nation's largest health insurance provider. And this story went into a stat investigation that went into the fact that the largest insurance company was pressuring medical staff to cut off, you know, certain things for seriously ill patients. You know, cutting off payments for stuff. All because they have this computer algorithm that tells them how things should go. Never mind what doctors and nurses and the professionals, never mind what they think. It's the computer algorithm. And they mandate that you stay within 1%. Now, you could deviate from the algorithm, but only 1%. 1%. And, you know, it's one of these things that's really, really just angering to me. Because it made me think back to when my grandmother passed. And, you know, she was 86 years old. She led a full life. But I still come back to die too soon. She fell, broke her hip, and that was basically the end. Because when she went to the hospital, they did the surgery. They repaired the hip. And then high pressure to move toward something called palliative care. You know, because you don't want her, you know, being poked and prodded all the time. You know, move her over here, she'll be comfortable. And what the family wanted was to give her a chance and said, look, we want her to be comfortable. We want her to not be poked and prodded and all this stuff that happened. But we want her to get rehab. We want her to have a chance to try and get up and to try and move around. We don't want her to sit in this bed and ultimately die. We want her to be moved around. We want her to be at least give her a shot. At least give her a chance to get up and walk out of this hospital. And we were told, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We understand. So when I see these stories that you've got a health insurer going, hey, we've got an algorithm that says, you know, how much care you should get. We've got an algorithm, that a flow chart that tells us, you know, what it is you should be getting. And this United Healthcare group evidently, repeatedly said, according to this article, that its algorithm, which predicts how long patients will need to stay in rehab, is merely a guidepost for their recovery. But now you've got, you know, people who are saying, hey, it's a lot different than what they're saying. What they're saying and what they're doing two very different things. And that, as I said, 1%. And what Stat came up with is internal documents that showed that UnitedHealth, their subsidiary, this NavaHealth, set a target for 2023 to keep rehab stays of patients in what? The Medicare Advantage plan within 1%. Now, again, we understand Medicare Advantage is the privatized healthcare plans. See, this is how they get away with this because it's, well, it's private health insurance. It's not actually Medicare. It's the Medicare Advantage. So the advantage is algorithm. And an algorithm ensures profit, evidently massive profits. Now, according to the report, former employees said missing the target for patients under their watch meant exposing themselves to discipline. So again, this is one of these moments where I come back to, I want union nurses. I want union doctors. I want people who aren't worried about getting fired for doing the right thing. I want people who are going to step up, speak out, and demand that, and be an advocate for patients. Because look, like, I was fortunate that I was able to go and be with her for those final couple of weeks. And I was pressuring the nurses and people to come try and move her. It was a constant fight and constant battle. Ultimately, I lost. But the thing is without a union, without that protection, without that backing, you know, you're opening yourself up to discipline and even termination, regardless of whether it's warranted, whether the Medicare coverage would have covered it. And according to the article, the stringent performance goal was part of a broader effort to reduce expensive nursing home care for frail patients with the privatized Medicare plans. This is according to internal documents. They say the strategy was conceived and executed by former top Medicare officials whose policies became a blueprint for UnitedHealth to reap hundreds of millions of dollars annually by shredding the government safety net with payment denials backed by an algorithm. Again, deny, 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 because, hey, they're not going to live long, and what are they going to do? Come back and sue you? And, you know, the article goes into a couple of horror stories. Look, you know, an older woman was, you know, found on the laundry floor by her grandson, had a stroke. And according to the algorithm, 20 days of rehab. That's what this woman, for a stroke, was according to the algorithm, that's what you get. When you look at the reality, the average person, according to the story, who has a severe impairment from a stroke is almost double what the algorithm said. So what do you think they ended up with? This poor woman ended up getting the short end of the stick. But you know what? Profit. Oh, boy. CEO pay. Oh, got to line those pockets. They also said a 78-year-old legally blind man who needed care for a failing heart and kidneys fell in a nursing home, was granted 16 days. Another person, nearing his discharge date for knee surgery, was expected to learn how to butt bump up and down stairs in only a few visits. And you go, how is this helpful? How is this healthcare? And the thing is if the case managers disagreed and tried to extend the patient's, the number of visits or their stay, again, you're the target. Now, what the article goes into is the final call ultimately is the doctor who reviews all of the information, someone the patient rarely sees. It's their responsibility. And where do you think I'm going with this? The reality is making that decision, choosing between your job performance and your conscience, choosing between, am I going to have a job or corporate profits? Am I going to be disciplined? Am I going to be let go? Am I going to be harassed from the higher ups? This is the problem that our healthcare system has had in the private hands, because it's all about money now. It's all about the bean counters running things and not actual. I got to tell you, there's I remember going back through this with my grandmother, and I've been thinking about this all day. And it was, you know, the bedside manner of the doctors who were moving us in this direction was so slick. I mean, they were so good at oh, you know, it's almost like funeral directors, you know, trying to con you out of your last dime. It was so angering. And when I look back at it, I believed what the doctors were saying. I believed that that she was going to get the opportunity to get the therapy and the care that she needed. And I failed her. And that sticks with me. Because it's one of those things that I just find really... Yeah, my aunt and I, we talk about this occasionally. Again, we let them talk us into that. And why? Well, the profit. They kept trying to push her out of the hospital and into a nursing home. You know, nothing more we can do here. And we're in a country right now where, again, we're the wealthiest country in the history of civilization at its wealthiest moment. We've got executives and CEOs and you know, the big moneyed people who are making just incredible amounts of wealth. And you look at the CEOs from these big insurance companies, and it's outrageous. You know, the fact that, you know, CEO compensation in this country has gone up 1,200% over the last, 45 years, while the typical worker's up to about 15%. And yet, the healthcare system that I remember, the doctors that I remember growing up actually cared about their patients. And the profit didn't play into it. There were no algorithms. There were no flow charts that I remember. And I got to tell you, it's time we start reclaiming our healthcare system. And this privatization, the profitization of our health. And understand, we're going to hear in this next presidential election a lot of talk about entitlements. We're going to hear a lot of talk about, you know, Medicare is going broke. You know, Social Security's going broke. We got to make some cuts. We got to push people off longer. We got to do more cost savings. Because they don't want to do what has to be done, which is, one, scrap the cap. You want to save Social Security, scrap the cap. Make rich people pay on every bit of their income and add wealth to this as well so that we have money in the system. And end this privatization scheme of our healthcare system. End it. Because there's a lot of healthcare dollars, a lot of Medicare dollars that are supposed to go into taking care of people that are just lining CEOs and investors' pockets. That's insane. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, during the break, my wife, looked over and said, you know, it wasn't your fault. And look, I understand. It wasn't my fault. I did everything that I thought at the time I could do. But I still blame myself for not knowing better, for not... And again, we do this to ourselves because the system is rigged against people. You want to trust, you want to believe that the best interests are front and center, and it's not about the profit. And look, I know a lot of people who work in the healthcare field, and I know they're going to be really ticked at what I've said, but I also know a lot of people who are going to go, yeah, sadly, it's all about counting the beans. It's all about the money. Which is why when you see these nurses going on strike and you see these nurses unions saying, look, staffing levels are important. When you see them going, look, we want to have a say in the care and how we protect our patients. I believe those folks. Those are the people that we should be heavily depending on and heavily supporting. Just my thoughts. Let's go to the phones. We got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
Semi-coherent. Rick, I'm going to tell you what. The only mistake you made was in believing that the doctor was going to tell you the truth. That's the only mistake you made. Because nowadays, you know, we've been brought up to believe that the doctor knows best and believe the doctor. But we conveniently forget that it's not just the doctor, it's also the insurance and the hospital administration, too. And I went through that with my mom when she had her very big stroke back in 2004. And she was in the hospital when she had the stroke, and I'd been telling them for 15 years, and I'm not exaggerating, that she was having strokes. And they'd say, oh, no, it wasn't a stroke. Well, when she had the big stroke, then the doctor said, she's been having strokes for years. I was like, I know this. I said this, and everyone told me I was wrong. But she went into, I had to put her in the nursing home for rehab. She was in there for like 4 months. So this 10
days. Yeah, that was, but Alice, if I could stop you, that was 2004. You know, now, according to this stat report, you know, you've now got United Healthcare saying your mother would only be entitled to 16 rehab visits and then cutting you out on your own. Not 4 months,
right.
16 visits. That's it.
Well, what I was going to say was the only thing that saved her on that was a combination of we were able to pay, and she also had the UMW health insurance.
Oh, okay.
Along with the Medicaid care. But it's ridiculous that in, as you say, in this nation, that we always seem to have plenty of money to spend on the war machine or the industrial complex, that we really don't care too much about the health of the people.
Yeah, I'll tell you,
it's
angering and it's frustrating and it has to change. And this is something we should be uniting around. But we're too busy worrying about, you know, what did Marjorie Three Names say today? Or, you know, what did Mark Wayne Mullen, he challenged a Teamster leader to a fight. That's what we focus on instead of this kind of stuff that's really important, that affects all of us.
Right, but, you know, we're sort of led there. You know, I actually got a phone call about a half an hour ago. They were doing they called the wrong person. Apparently it was the Republican Party for Pennsylvania or something, and they wanted my opinion on several things about the Republican Party, and I really don't think they were too happy with the answers that I gave them. But, you know, the Republicans are saying, oh, worry about the transgenders. Oh, worry because someone's getting a food stamp. Immigrants at the border, illegal. And that's what everybody's focusing on instead of worrying about, hey, what if I get sick? How am I going to pay my bills? Yeah. And what have you. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Appreciate it, Alice. And, you know, this again goes back to, you know, the sad reality is we have this privatized healthcare system where profit is king, where the money is the motive. Instead of a system that, you know, funded by we the people, run by we the people, owned by we the people, we have a privatized system. And we also have a system set up where Our tax dollar takes care of the most vulnerable and the young and the old. And we have a healthcare system in the middle where if you're healthy enough to have a job, then you can have private health insurance. And everyone loves their private health insurance until they need it. Or if they need it long term. You know, acute stuff, you know, most people, it's covered. You're going to be okay. But try having a long-term chronic illness with some of these insurance companies. And it's insane to me that we've got all these insurance companies who have all of these different, you know, these groups. You got to stay within network. Oh, we got co-insurance and we got co-payments and we got this fee and that fee. And oh, don't forget about that. And it's all about trying to restrain people from getting the care that they need. And it's crazy to me. Because we spend more on healthcare than any other country on this planet. And we get worse outcomes for too many people. Now, look, if you're at the top of the game, if you're one of our billionaire folks, if you're one of those CEOs, you know, making 5,000 times what your median income worker is making, yeah, you're going to get the best care in the world. But if you're a working stiff who spent, you know, 40, 50 years, you know, swinging a hammer or driving a truck or working in an office and you're now relying on Medicare and you got sold on the Medicare Advantage plans because they have gym memberships and we get sneakers and we get all kinds of goodies. Oh, boy. Without understanding that they deny a lot. And to have these big insurers in your most vulnerable moments deny you what you need is just cruel. And yet, I don't know that it happens to enough people for us to really care. Will this matter? Will somebody think tomorrow this is really important and we've got to do something about it? I don't know. According to the report, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid, Medicare and Medicaid, they're looking into it. But here's the thing, and this is where my problem in all of this is. The problem with our government and private industry is there's a swinging door. The people who are working at Medicare and Medicaid right now or working in that field, they know that their next job is in the private sector. They know they're going to be able to take the expertise that they learn working for us and learning how to navigate the system. They know at a certain point they can go into the private sector and make 3, 4, 5, 10 times as much as they're making working for we the people. They know that and they do it. And am I surprised that this scheme, this algorithm, this idea was dreamt up by somebody looking to cash in who was once an employee of we the people? No, I'm not surprised at that at all. And we shouldn't be, because that happens in every agency in our government, because there's such a cozy relationship between the regulators and the industry. And I keep saying we need to do something about that. We need to have a strong wall. Or look, you can go work in the private sector 5 years after you leave government service. But no, you're infringing on my ability. No. We're just not allowing you to use the knowledge that we've given you to harm our system. What's it going to take? And this is where I keep coming back to. What's it going to take get the right outrage? Because I was listening to right-wing radio today. There's a lot of outrage. A lot of outrage at Biden. I heard Hunter Biden's name a couple of times. There's a bunch of craziness. There's a bunch of the outrage candy out there that's being force-fed to people. When does this get front page? When does the fact that American working people are vulnerable, 1, 2, 3, 4 paychecks away from real financial trouble, one illness away from financial trouble? I still remember a guy we met during one of our food drives. He was a lifelong conservative. Never missed a day of work in his life, never collected a moment of unemployment, had a heart attack, got sick, lost everything, ended up homeless. can happen to anybody. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back after this. Stick around.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. At the APEC summit, President Biden and leaders from 13 nations say they've laid the foundation to tackle issues including the supply chain and AI. Mr. Biden saying,
if we had this agreement in place we're talking about today, we would not have had to lay off so many auto workers because lack of semiconductors and many other examples.
A mistrial is declared after jurors remain deadlocked on ex-Louisville police officer Brett Hankins' verdict on federal civil rights charges in the Breonna Taylor case. Taylor family attorney Lonita Baker.
You know, a mistrial is not an acquittal, and so we live another day to fight for justice for Breonna, and that's what she's going to continue to do is fight for justice for Breonna Taylor.
With fuel running out in Gaza, Felipe Lazzarini, head of the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency, says,
clearly, if the issue of the fuel is not addressed, we run the risk to have to suspend the entire humanitarian operation.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Low unemployment is holding steady in Wisconsin, 3.2% in October compared to 3.1% in September. Department of Workforce Development economist Dennis Winters.
People are getting jobs, they're getting paid well, and hence they're spending that money. And as you know, that's what drives the U.S. economy pretty much.
More than 3 million people are working in non-farm jobs in Wisconsin. That's close to a record. Republican Congressmen Mike Gallagher and Tom Tiffany were the only two members of Wisconsin's delegation to vote against a bill to avoid a government shutdown. The bill divides government funding into two portions with new deadlines in January and February. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Discover the secret to a healthier you at Lake County Botanics. Vape Walkie specializes in top-quality hemp products from CBD to Delta 8, all curated just for you. You'll find Delta 8, Delta 10, THCA, and more legal hemp compounds in disposable vapes, cartridges, edibles, and more. Isolates, broad-spectrum, or full-spectrum CBD, they've got it all. They even have products for your furry friend. Open Monday to Saturday, 11 to 7, and Sundays from 11 to 5. Mention this ad to get a free gummy at 215 Oakton Avenue, Suite C in Pewaukee, lakecountybotanics.com.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Chance for scattered showers tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows level off around 38, west winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, highs around 45, lows around 28 tomorrow night.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height.
Currently, it's 55 degrees.
Timeout!
All right! Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK, and on the Civic Media app. Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Vastly exceeds its price.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I saw a great picture today. And, you know, I haven't seen John Boehner in a long time. But there was a picture of John Boehner with Nicole Kidman. And, you know, look, I got to give him credit. He looks pretty good for an older dude. But he tweeted out the picture of himself with Nicole Kidman. And he said, I know you can't tell from the picture, but I am blushing, which I thought was hysterical. And it's one of those things, I got to tell you, I always loved John Boehner because I thought he was funny. I politically don't agree with anything that he had to say, but this was a guy who, you know, the old school conservatives that you could get along with and you could argue about politics and then you go have a couple of drinks. Or in John Boehner's case, you argue while having a couple of drinks and then go have a couple of drinks and then have a couple more and then a couple more and then a couple more, which is why, again, he's always red. That was the point. I think if you didn't get what his point was, that was it. But I thought it was funny, and it made me think of a better time. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend Sarah Burris. She's a reporter at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website, if you want to take a look at her work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
I mean, the reason that John Boehner still looks really good is because he's practically pickled at this point. The dude has had more red wine, I think, than exists in Napa.
And had a glass of it in his hand in the picture as well.
Ah, oh, bless him. Bless him. And now apparently he's a lobbyist for the weed industry.
Yeah, he's a pot guy now.
Which you would think that would mean that he would be drinking less wine, but no. Now he's just doing weed and wine.
Yeah. No,
like, you know, to each his own.
There you go. But I thought it was a funny thing. I mean, I miss politics being funny. Miss it being fun. But then again, here's the thing. We got a guy who's running who wants to destroy democracy. And as Chris Christie said, going to be a felon this spring, which, you know, Chris Christie seems to be the only Republican really going after him.
He is. And I think he's also one of the only Republicans that's still living in reality at this point, because it seems like the majority of Republicans are either, I think they're probably in two camps. One, they're still afraid of him, or two, they're so far up his butt that they're tickling his throat. And
that's far.
I think, I know, right? That's like really far.
That's far.
see the tonsils. But I think with the majority of people, I mean, even watching those debates with people like Nikki Haley, she's hedging. I mean, everybody is just so pathetically sort of catering to Donald Trump and everything that he needs and wants, and begging for his endorsements, and it's just enabling his bad behavior, and it makes it worse, because I think we should stop feeding the monster. Yeah. You know, and I think that is what gives him his power, is the more people take him seriously, the more credibility he has.
Now the thing that gets me is, you know, we keep feeding into it. Like, you know, today they lifted the gag order. I was against putting the gag order on him because it made him look like a victim. It's just one of those things where you go, you can't keep doing this. I mean, granted, you know, he is actively calling for violence. He is actively calling for the destruction of our democracy. He's actively doing a bunch of stuff. But I think by trying to put a gag order on him, I think just makes it worse.
I would say that, but it seems like in the case, so the gag order that was paused for a bit while he appealed is the one that was the most narrow gag order ever, which was basically like, don't expose my clerk's name and identity and face all over the internet and ask people to come and kill her. Like, that's a pretty narrow sort of demand from a judge. And you basically, whenever they had the gag order pause in Washington, they were able to come back, the special counsel was able to come back and say, look what he's doing, and had a bunch of different examples of people that he's attacked and, you know, crazy danger. We literally, just this afternoon, the jury in the case for DePapp, who attacked Paul Pelosi, found him guilty on two felony counts. He's still facing state charges. And you're telling me you want to, I mean, this guy basically was the epitome of getting up on the stand and say that words inspired him. He described himself as being indoctrinated. He said that he believed the conspiracies. And that is the perfect example of somebody who bought into Donald Trump and then acted. And so, you know, they want to pause this gag order, and I'm like, this dude was just found guilty. Like, what are you thinking?
Now, look, I understand what you're saying. I hear you. I get it. But I just don't know how you enforce it. And again, you're giving, you know, you're adding more fuel to the fire. You know, I guess I'm someone who believes in more speech than less. I struggle with it. I struggle with this gag order, and I completely understand what you're saying. I get it. But I struggle with it.
I agree. I get where you're coming from in terms of struggling, and I don't know how you necessarily enforce it, but at the same time, you know, I think about the case in Florida when they fined Donald Trump and Halina Haba, almost $1 million for the frivolous lawsuit. You know, that really has calmed down the frivolous lawsuit from him. And so
yeah, there you go.
Maybe that's how much it takes. Maybe just to get it, you know, to work is that somebody's got to be charged with that much money.
Got to follow the money. And speaking of following the money, did you see the ethics report on George Santos? Evidently, $50,000 he spent on sites like OnlyFans,
which is so gross.
Because me and my son were just having this conversation, going, "Who in their right mind spends money on something like that? Who would pay for that? It's insane." And now we see it's George Santos.
My first thought was, "Oh my God, this dude has like, you know, a porn addiction or something like that." But then I started thinking, if he's spending that much money, is he funneling it to somebody? Because if you're going to funnel it through somewhere, that would be the perfect place to do it, is to pretend like you're paying for services when, you know, you're essentially giving it to somebody else.
Yeah, but is that a campaign? Is that a campaign service? I mean, can you use campaign money for that? I mean, I don't know. I'm struggling with that one too.
I love the idea that he got Botox, but he thought that was a campaign expenditure. Because, I mean, think about it. If all of those politicians out there who really consider like their appearance, we had this whole conversation, you remember, about Romney McDaniel spending like hundreds of thousands of dollars in makeup and hair stuff and at the expense of Republican donors. So, I mean, where is that line? Because, I mean, yeah, his forehead looks great, but is that going to matter in prison?
It might. Depends on who he's looking up at. I'm not going there. Look, when he's out of Congress, he can drive the 27-foot Wienermobile. There's a job for him. He can ride the Wiener.
Oh, you're making my face turn as red as my shirt.
But they also found that he spent $20,000 of campaign money on personal expenses, went right to his bank account, $6,000 in purchases from Ferragamo stores, and actually took some money out at a casino. Again, I don't know that these are campaign related, but here's the thing. You know, he says he's not going to run for re-election, but he's still there.
I wonder, because we have the Supreme Court basically saying that money is speech and we can spend all of this money however the heck we want. And so, I mean, I'm curious to hear from the Supreme Court. Does this mean that, you know, it's perfectly acceptable to spend thousands of dollars on Botox and Ferragamo shoes? There was a sneaker day at the Capitol, which makes me wonder, you know, is he passing this off as, oh, well, I had to go buy a new pair of shoes for sneaker day at the Capitol? Is it that, you know, or there, it seems like there are so many justifications and so many loopholes that you can just drive a train through it at this point. So and stuff like that, you just got to blame the Supreme Court and be like,
yeah,
you paved this road. No, you're driving on it.
You're spot on. Right. Let's move over to another guy not running for re-election, Joe Manchin. Even Joe Manchin is saying Donald Trump would destroy democracy in America, and yet he's talking about a potential presidential run. And I don't know where or how. Maybe the no labels people are still courting him. Any thoughts?
Well, I know for sure the no labels people are definitely trying to get to him, and they have been for a while. The interview that he did, he said that he is that he promises he's not going to be a spoiler candidate. And he said that he doesn't support Donald Trump, but then he says he wants to run for president. And I mean, too, that same time whenever he did his resignation, he said something like, you know, I want to go spend more time with my family, the old, you know, adage. But he mentioned his 10 grandchildren. And I think we were talking about last week or the week before, where it was just like, but you want to run for president? The guy's gotten really good at talking out of both sides of his mouth. So it's, I don't want to be a spoiler, but I want to be a presidential candidate. And I want to spend time with my grandchildren, but really, not really, you know, like,
I'm going to go across the country. Either,
yeah. Like, are you getting an RV to go through Iowa? Like, what is this?
Do you think you could borrow Clarence Thomas's RV?
Probably. I bet he could.
Or he's got his own rich guy to buy him an RV. Now, the thing is Manchin, he reads the tea leaves like anybody else. He knows he didn't stand a snowball's chance in winning re-election. Yeah. So, of course, he bailed out.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I feel like everybody's sort of pulling their hair out, being like, oh, my God, Manchin's not running again. What are we going to do? The Senate. It's like, dude, the guy wasn't going to win. You know, like, calm down. Don't freak out. There are other states that now we can spend money in instead of trying to defend Joe Manchin. We have a legitimate race in Montana and an incredible senator who the people actually love in the state. So we should be spending more money on stuff like that rather than fools like Joe Manchin who aren't really even Democrats.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that she does. She's got an incredible piece on UFOs. UFOs, Sarah. UFOs.
I know. It's so funny. I'm the UFO beat. It's like every time there's a UFO story, my editor's like, hey, I got a story for you. he's like a back alley drug deal. Like, hey, you want to see this? I got UFOs for you. And so this is actually a story from a guy who's writing a book about the way that the government has trying to sort of research and better understand UAPs or UFOs. And I think the biggest piece from this book is that putting all of this under the umbrella of the military is a really, really stupid idea.
Yep.
And I mean, yes, there's that whole idea of the military is always going to hide stuff and everything's always going to be like $10,000 more because, you know, it's the military. But the piece that I didn't consider is that when you're talking about UAPs, so much of it is going to be, you know, spy stuff from other countries, and it's going to be national security issues. So putting it under that rubric and also having tech people who actually know something about how that kind of technology works is probably a lot better than a Navy pilot who's just going to be like, oh my God, you guys, look at that.
Yeah, right? I got drunk last night and they said, whoa.
Exactly. So, I mean, that was a big piece of it. He also gave a huge clap to SETI and talked about, like, if we really genuinely care about monitoring, you know, what's going on in the world and the universe and what's beyond the solar system, then we should be funding it. And right. It's a good point.
And we shouldn't be funding it to someone like Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or any of them right. To play with their phallic-shaped rockets. It's that simple for me. And speaking of aliens, since I brought up aliens, Marjorie Trainwreck Greene was on Piers Morgan. I got to tell you, I'm never a huge Piers Morgan fan, but I got to give him credit here.
Right. I mean, that was like talk about the strangest thing that happened this week is me actually agreeing with something Piers Morgan said. Three Toes has a new book out where she tries to clean up her, I guess, all of the crappy things she's done and said, like the Jewish space laser. Yeah. And the interview that she did, she basically tries to tell Piers Morgan, no, that's not what I said. And so he's like reading it from, you know, the phone or the tablet. And he's like, no, you talked about the Rothschilds and the space laser that caused the fires in California. And she's like, that's not what I said. That's not what I was talking about. And he just holds it up. And it's like, it's right here. And she just kept denying it and kept denying it. It's like, wow, that is like straight up Trumpy, right? Like only Trump can get away with saying, you know, don't believe your lying eyes. But it got crazier. Like then she started talking about the 2020 election, and Morgan is like, no, dude, you lost. And she's like, oh man, there's this court case going on in Fulton County, and this is a huge breaking news case. And it turns out, I did some digging trying to figure out what this case was. It's a judge who actually ruled and said, yes, I think there's enough evidence to say that there can be security breaches in electronic voting. And the reason that she said that is namely because the Republicans broke into the
system,
Coffee County Register and jacked with the machines. It's like, okay, that's not how that works.
Again,
like,
that was the whole sentence. You had to read the whole sentence to get that. They only read the part that they want to read. It's that simple.
I was laughing so hard. Like, come on, you idiot.
Well, there you go. Conspiracy wacko. But Sarah, as always, appreciate the time. Great stuff. Hope people will check out the website, rawstory.com. Make sure you look for Sarah Burris's work. Sarah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have an awesome week, everybody.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Let's take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1982. That Tuesday, the National Football League players ended their 57-day strike. The league scrambled to get the new season going, scheduling games for that very next Sunday. The shortened 9-game season included 2 games played before the walkout, and the rest after the strike ended. The biggest issue that led to the strike was compensation and benefits. The NFL had seen a surge in television revenue with a new 5-year contract worth $2.1 billion. The players asked for 55% of the league's growing profits. The Players Association also wanted a minimum pay scale based on years of service and improvements in healthcare and retirement benefits. The owners flatly refused. On September 20th, the Green Bay Packers beat the New York Giants in a Monday night football game. The next day, the New York Daily News reported, quote, "For the first time in its 63-year history, labor troubles will throw the NFL for a loss." By a unanimous vote of its executive committee, the league's Players Association yesterday voted to call a strike. The article continued by writing, quote, "The players stressed that they had been forced to call the strike in frustration over what they termed management's twin failures to take them seriously and to bargain in good faith." Sports Illustrated summed up fan sentiments about the strike with a cover headline reading, "Pfft," over the image of a deflated football. Finally, the two sides came to an agreement. The players won raises, bonuses based on years in the league, and severance packages for retiring players. But the gains were far below the union's goals. Bitterness lingered, and 5 years later, the players would be on strike once again. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Let's quick go to the phone lines. I got Terry in Wisconsin on line 2. Terry, how are we doing today, buddy?
Good, Rick. Very good. I got a question for you, Rick. I was having coffee with a guy this morning that I always have coffee with. He mentioned the fact that with these raises that have been won by these unions, that it would increase the cost of the product. And I just don't believe that. I just don't believe that. I mean, there's enough. Look at the CEOs like you talk about. What did you say, 1,200 to 1?
I forget
what you said early in the show here.
Yeah, it was 1,200% since 1978. Workers got 15%.
Uh-huh. So
no, I don't agree with that either. I mean, the argument is, well, if you're raising the wages, the product's going to go up, and that doesn't have to be the case because we're supposed to have a competitive market where people, you know, compete on price, and you know, right. Maybe we just don't have as much profit for the CEO and for the shareholders. Maybe that's we start doing things a little bit differently, a little bit more efficiently. I'm sorry, if the company's making the kind of profits that the big three were making, a quarter of a $1 trillion over the last decade, they can pay a living wage to the people who actually make the product and do the work. It's that simple. And for me, full stop right there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Rick. I couldn't agree more.
Appreciate it, Terry.
You bet. Keep up the good work, Rick.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Let's go to Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are we doing today, buddy?
Fine, thank you. So I wanted to raise a couple of points. One, I think you're spot on with regard to Marjorie Taylor Greene's interview with Piers Morgan. I mean, you know, when confronted by the fact this is Trumpian levels of denial, and, you know, it was amazing because the thing she could fall back on and what she repeatedly did was, well, you know what? I've seen the evidence as a congressperson because, you know, we're supposed to believe that as a congressperson, she's seen some sort of evidence that the rest of us aren't privy to on all of these topics, you know, the Biden's criminal background and conspiracies and all sorts of other nonsense with regard to the election and, you know, you name it. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, Trumpian levels of denial. Beyond that, I also find it amusing with regard to your last guest in terms of the whole question of UFOs and so forth, and I think she nailed it dead on. I mean, this idea that we hold people up who have perhaps a military background or pilots or something. Okay, those people are not working at the skunk works. Okay, they're not privy to the latest technology that's out there in terms of what the U.S. government or other governments are hiding. So just because you're a pilot does not mean, therefore, then you are qualified to discredit everything that's out there and declare that something must be from another planet. I mean, this is just sort of just, you know, different level thinking. There's this thing called the Fermi paradox, and Enrico Fermi asked that question in a casual discussion circa 1950. You know, if there's all of this life out there statistically, then where is it? Why can't we find any of it? Well, yeah, but we've sort of amended a lot of that in terms of thinking about how rare life might be. And then also life has to develop into intelligent life. And then beyond that, even if it does, the vast distances between habitable worlds in this universe may mean that the universe has a lot of life, but it will never find it other life, other intelligent life, because of the vast distances involved. Right. I mean, this isn't Star Trek. There's not even a hypothetical theory as to how we're going to somehow get to light speed, let alone the multiples of light speed that you see introduced in science fiction that allow people to travel huge distances in science fiction movies. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's fun that people like to think of things that we can't explain. That pie is shrinking smaller and smaller every year as science explains more and more. We used to think all sorts of things were possibly aliens from another world. Now it's less and less, but there are people who want to believe it. And it turns out the psychologists have explained that in the same way that, you know, people used to need to believe in angels.
Right.
Well, now for modern society, extraterrestrials are our angels. They're the ones that are going to save us from ourselves. They're going to solve our energy problems, our food issues. They're going to save us from our environmental concerns. Aliens will get here with all the answers, cure all of our problems, let us live forever, because that's how it's going to work, because we've all seen too many science fiction movies.
And yet Americans believe in science less than they did just a couple of years ago, and even lesser than they did before the pandemic. I'm struggling with that. But Steve, appreciate No, go ahead.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the faith in those institutions has waned, while belief in crazy has gone through the roof. So, you know, people love Alex Jones, but Michael Eric Dyson, no, we don't need him. You know, so yeah, they're crazy.
No, I appreciate it. No, and look, I actually met a flat earther, and so there you have it. I did. It was the weirdest thing. he was explaining to me that the earth is flat and how he believes this. And when we were in Niagara Falls over the weekend, we're standing on a bridge and I'm looking out at the water over where the falls go over. And I go, you know, if you're the first guy traveling down here, because we were thinking about it, it'd be great to whitewater raft through there until you hit that spot where the flat earth just ended and off you went to the end. I can get thinking about that. Only we kind of know better now. At least I thought we did. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.